Hi, Terry Mason.
So a very warm welcome to everyone officially to the Peace Alliance Action Call for the month of June 2020. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's a pleasure to be with all of you. Thank you for joining us. The agenda for the call is in a little bit. I'm going to introduce our special guests, Hart Phoenix and Jeffrey Weisberg. We'll hear from them for a little while, and then we'll have a chance for questions and answers with them and discussion. Then we're going to talk about some actions that we recommend folks can take this month and beyond. And then we're going to hear an update on the Department of Peacebuilding campaign from Ken Berman. After that, we'll have a chance for shares from the field, and that's all of you, something that's on your mind, that's happening in your activism work, in your organizing, in your sense of peacebuilding from the local to the national. It's an open time for you all to be heard and hear each other. And that's the plan for tonight. There's so much going on these days. I in some ways was daunted by the idea of encapsulating it with people, first of all in quarantine, and then the unrest and conflict and challenges and dealing more straight on with the racial tensions in this country currently and historically. There's just so much. And as usual, I appreciate folks that in trying times are willing to come together in a context like this, where I think we really highly value the potential for dialogue, the potential for hearing each other in powerful ways, and actually creating the world that we want, the world that we dream of. By way of hopefully inspiration, I want to read to you all I'm going to paraphrase, actually, because there's a couple of words I want to change for gender equity. A quote that's on the Peace Alliance homepage from Robert F. Kennedy. He said something like, "It is from numberless diverse acts of courage and belief that human history is shaped. Each time a person stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, they send forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, these ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." So here we are, finding our courage, finding our belief, trying to take care of ourselves and others in our immediate surroundings, and trying to care about people all around the world. It's really my pleasure to have our special guests with us tonight. Hart and Jeffrey have been guiding forces in the Peace Alliance pretty much since its inception. Hart was one of the founders in 2004. Each of them have served on the board of directors for years. Each of them has taken a turn as the president of the board of directors. And then in 2012, they decided to initiate a local new creation, a center for peacebuilding. They created the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding in Gainesville. And this is a center of empowerment for the possibility for dialogue, the possibility for equity and balance, for a new kind of justice that really in some ways has existed in humanity for centuries, for millennia, and in other ways it's just being born in recent decades. So really thank you guys for being such great pioneers and friends. They've been two of my best friends since I've known them. This is about 15 years ago, and I'm privileged to say that. So without further ado, welcome aboard Hart and Jeffrey. Please take it away.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. That was really lovely. It's great to be on this call with you, especially during this time right now of I think what's happening when I think about it, I just think that when we entered into 2020, I thought finally we're going to be seeing with full vision. We're going to be seeing with perfect vision, because so many of us were carrying that kind of torch. And rather than that happening, it seemed like everywhere we turned, something really crazy happened for the past 6 months, really, and kind of could have brought us into this real place of utter despair and hopelessness. And instead, it feels like we're finally uncovering and hopefully discovering and then recovering from this darkness that has been part of our United States of America from the very, very beginning. So I'm really lifted up by this moment in the midst of my grief. And I love that we can hold both and at the same time. So yes, we were co-founders, Jeffrey as well, co-founders of the Peace Alliance many years ago. And it was one of some of the most profound moments of awareness that I ever had, entering into the political system and thinking that I actually could change anything or that it even mattered if I had a voice. And then from that, I learned so much. You know, I learned that from Dennis Kucinich that the poverty and nastiness and homelessness and hunger were weapons of mass destruction. And I learned that peace was not just peace in my own heart or lack of war, but it truly, truly was something that could be in a community. It could be in the government. It could be anywhere if we had the skills and we used our resources for it. And so in the years that we worked with everybody at the Peace Alliance, we developed a lot of different skills. We found so many great varieties of modalities, different programs, different trainings that actually could give on the ground underground
resources.
Mm-hmm. It's great to have someone next to you, you know. Right, on the ground resources within a community. And so we decided to start the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building as a community model, figuring that if we could do it in a small community, if we could actually build these relationships, which are really the most important part of peace building in our eyes, really knowing what we're talking about, educating ourselves, but then meeting the people that have the power and meeting the people that have been marginalized and starting to really allow all of that to sink in and understand all of our common humanity. So we have created a really exciting model that has not only been in Gainesville, but has been translated in several languages across the globe and in many different states, certain pieces of it. And I think tonight we're going to share just a little bit of that with you, with the hope that some of the inspiration of it and some of the possibility of it could excite and inspire you and maybe fill your cup a little bit more than you already get just by being, that we all already get by being with each other. So you got something you want to share?
Let's see. Well, it's a pleasure to be with you all. I love kind of this reunion of so many people working diligently for the Department of Peace legislation, and you know, that idea is just revolutionary and inspired us. As I see, Terry Mason is still on is on the call, and the board of the Peace Alliance is. That they're such heroes to me because they've been volunteering for years and years and years. You know, not a whole lot of progress with the cabinet level. But we got a little bit frustrated at a certain point of like, this is like moving the Titanic with a straw. You know, this is a big lift. And yet the concept of it is, how do we bring some of these best and next practices into local communities to help coordinate, facilitate, and focalize these efforts in really moving the needle of peacemaking and peace building. And this notion of negative peace versus positive peace. Negative peace is essentially the cessation of violence, right? Can we just stop the killing? Can we stop fighting? And yet once that stops, then what, right? And the peace building element comes in to lift people into their highest potential, to create systems of change. And practices and strategies that ultimately get embedded into communities. And so we're really excited to see some actual changes happening in our community and others around the world. And so for us, our pillars are really restorative justice as a primary practice of addressing harm and different behaviors, social emotional learning as a foundation of really developing ourselves and understanding our needs and what drives us and how do we communicate, using the power and the strategy of dialogues, bringing people together, and then having trauma training, trauma awareness as our four key pillars. And so, you know, today I was sharing with a few people early on that we did a police youth dialogue in Gainesville. We've done probably about 110 of them over the last 5 or 6 years. So we have a couple law enforcement agencies with the city and the county that are really bought into this and committed to it. And so we had one with a bunch of young men. All of them are African-American youth. And they're starting what's called the Heroes Program. So this is a summer program to support these young men. And it was so interesting to have the young people before the cops came in. And one of the issues and concerns that they brought up was around George Floyd. And so when the cops came in and we eventually had this conversation about the use of force, and would cops stand up against what's another word, stand up for right action when maybe they're less senior or you know, just when they're seeing this, can a cop exert their own moral authority in a situation? And it was really challenging because the cop said, of course we would do that. And one of my co-directors, who's a retired captain of 30 years, he said, when I was a young cop, there's no way that I would have questioned my seniors in there. And so it just kind of spoke to the need of a lot of work to be done in law enforcement. But there are some pretty promising things, I think, that are happening in communities around the country. So, you know, for us, using restorative justice as one of those strategies of addressing harm is seeing some really positive results. One of the areas that we work with is training a program that works with reentry for young people coming back into the community. And so all of their staff have been trained in this, and they do what's called a family reintegration circle to bring people, these young people, back into the community. You know, what we recognize is that it does take a village. I know that's a little bit cliche, but what are we doing in our own communities to strengthen what's often referred to as like a system of care? How do we bring in all these different elements and supporters so they're not siloed, but in fact, they're really tightly coordinated and supporting? And we just are encouraging people to think outside their own silos and how to engage people, particularly who are different from us, and to challenge ourselves in building bridges of understanding and cooperation with academia, with law enforcement, with schools, with mental health, so that we can strengthen this fabric and cohesion and work together and introduce some of these new ideas. What would you add to that?
Well, I would say, does anybody have any questions or thoughts? I mean,
we have, you know, some 5 or 10 minutes, Dan, of maybe we could engage in a conversation about, you know, this idea of community peace building and how do we in fact affect change and what do we need as advocates, champions, practitioners to be ready to do more of this work.
Yeah, thank you. It's so rich. I've got a half dozen questions come to my mind, and a couple of them right in the forefront. But I don't want to monopolize. I imagine other people have questions too. So I want to go out to the field. There are 36 of us. So I guess we'll use the official 39. Excuse me, hand raising. If you could either push the hand raise button on your screen on the app to let me know that you want to talk. If you're on the phone, you can press *9. And that'll raise your hand. Or if you don't see the button to raise your hand, but your camera is on, you can just raise your physical hand and I'll call on you if you have a question. I don't see one in about 5 seconds. I'm gonna go ahead.
Yeah, so what are y'all thinking? How do we make this change? What's working in your community? What do you have? Yeah. Some of your questions.
Can I just say one thing? If you want to raise your hand, on the bottom of your screen, click the participants button, and then you'll see the raise hand button.
Right.
Thank you.
That's where you get that.
Thanks, Terry. I think it's.
I would say just one thing really quickly, and that's that, you know, what blows my mind is that, you know, we're right in the community, and so we know what's happening in the criminal justice world and also in schools, the new programming that they're trying to do. There's so much value in so many of the separate pieces being put together, but the general public has no idea about it because it's not systemic. So it's like, yeah, we're doing police youth dialogues, but we're doing it once a month with the the police department, once a month with the sheriff's department. It's nothing. It's 24 people. It's great. But, you know, what we're seeing now after what happened is that it's speeding up. They know that we need to change the system. So it's very helpful, hopeful as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you a big, messy ball of a question, and you can sort of pick it apart and take big pieces of it. So racial equity, there are so many pieces to it. All right. There's economic, there's historical, there's psychological, there's what's happening in education from early childhood, there's behavioral, you know, all the factors that go into creating racial disparities and racial disadvantages. And I have a sense of where restorative justice and social emotional learning comes in, you know, from some of my experience. But so part of my question is, where do you see the leverage places? Where do you see the possibilities for movement? And then the other part of my big messy question is, starting to hear more talk about reallocating resources around policing. Okay, people talk about defunding or reorienting, like how do you turn half of a police department into social workers or something? I mean, that's a radical expression, but it's surprising to me all of a sudden to see it gaining traction. It almost reminds me of when I first heard of a Department of Peacebuilding, like there are people officially taking note of what seems like at the time, like a really radical idea, and there's momentum. So I'm wondering, and you interact with a lot of police officers and public defenders and state attorneys, do you have any particular perspective on that movement? So those are kind of two big balls for you to...
Big, juicy, juicy questions.
Thank you.
You know, the first question the first thoughts that come to my mind about your question is, what we're seeing is that that there is a deficit, if you will. There's a huge gap in people's knowledge. Can you still hear us?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Some phone came in. So there's a huge gap in knowledge and confidence for so many people. And what we're finding is that when people get exposed to some of these skill sets of peacemaking and peace building, and are then able to translate it through their own lens and their own cultural context, and bring it into their world, whether it's law enforcement, education, you know, culture, race, that's where I think, you know, in this idea of a theory of change, where you kind of saturate and you really infuse different groups with this skill set and confidence. And then as their confidence grows, they're able to then expand it more. And we have a woman who works for us. She's African-American. She's formerly incarcerated. She served 8 years in prison, and she's the director of our community justice. And she was sharing with her brother about resources that exist, internal resources and resources that exist out into the community. And she said he started to cry and like, I wish I knew this earlier on, right? I'm grateful to know it now, but I wish I had known this earlier. And so there's a real challenge of translating some of these peace practices into cultures that are different than white. And I got some pushback from one of my African-American colleagues who doesn't like peace building because there's a belief and an experience and a perception that it's colonialism again. And I was like, whoa, that makes a lot of sense, you know? And I took it personally at first because I'm a, you know, very strong advocate of peace building, but that is so important that we understand this cultural and racial context of bringing in these peace practices into communities and groups that might benefit, but how do they get the skills to then go into their communities and expand it out? So that's a big part of our work, Dan. I wonder if there's any thoughts or comments about that before I address the defund police. Well, what are you thinking? I'm going to start calling on you if you don't raise your hand.
I see.
Karen, I see you shaking your head. Who's got a thought of what we just shared or this idea of how do we expand?
I see Christina has her hand up. Maybe she can weigh in on some aspect of that. Christina, do you want to speak up?
I had a question in mind other than that, because this is huge, and I really can't address that, but I have a question that can wait till when we're finished with this part.
I think I say bring it on, and we'll probably weave it together, revisit what we were talking about before.
Okay, I'm asking for some advice, which is how to deal with people who do not want peace. And when I have talked to them in the past about a Department of Peace, they act like this is way too big, it's way too idealistic. Congress isn't buying it because we don't need more government, we don't need more laws, we need to deal with the laws we already have. And, you know, my thinking is, well, why didn't the founding fathers do this? I mean, no brainer there. However, I'm in the very vast minority, and I've been working with Peace Camp the last few summers because Mahatma Gandhi apparently said, if you want peace, start with the children. And that's a huge challenge because these are children and their bodies are growing and changing and they have to move around. And some of them are violent with the other children. And a lot of them aren't. And they really do learn the skills. And hopefully even the ones who are very active and not very cooperative, hopefully the seeds of peace are being planted in them or are being grown, because we already have the seeds of peace within us.
Do you want to take a shot at that?
Well, what I wanted to say about, I've lost my train of thought, honestly. I hear you about the kids. I think what it is being authentic and really not going in with the kids or with people that are against the Department of Peace or with people that you're talking about, Jeffrey, where you're just... kind of going into communities and they don't get it. I mean, what we need to do is not go in anywhere and be the saviors and be the ones that have the answers. We need to be curious. We need to go into these areas with the kids and ask them what's going on with them. What's their trials? What do they need? And the same thing in the communities. We don't assume that the African American communities do not have the incredible wisdom, tribal wisdom, wisdom for the ages, or any other community. We know that every human being has that. So what we want to do is just go in and just kind of become as close as a part of that community, so that we develop trust and we build relationship and we become allies, because we're not allies to start with, even mm-hmm. though we think we are. You know, we're like, we do this work, we're for you, we want equality and justice. And at the same time, we are not standing in the same just ground. So I think that a lot of it really has to do with, you know, are we willing to listen first? Are we so in a rush to make something happen that we miss the part that we're not giving voice? They're not giving voice to what they need. And within that, we know that everybody needs peace. Everybody wants peace. You know, we know that ultimately. And so how do we invite that to the forefront? And that's kind of the work that we're doing here. And that's why it takes long. I mean, 8 years doing police youth dialogues, I would have thought that almost all the cops here have been trained, but they didn't all change. they've made incremental, some have made drastic changes. So it really does take time to build a relationship, and that's why the Department of Peace Building is taking a long time. A lot of it has to do with us and our own intention and our own humility and our own level of understanding that we really are all equal and that we need each voice, however different it is. We're part of the human family.
There, you know, I'll do a quick thought on that. Christine, I love this book, and it's called The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey. So it's The Seven Habits. Stephen Covey, his son, wrote this book called The Speed of Trust. And it talks about character and competence are the two key elements of building trust. And so you could be the nicest person in the world, but if you don't know how to do brain surgery, I'm not going to you for that, right? Or conversely, you could be really, really skillful, but if you're just a nasty person, right, you're not going to have that level of trust. And so in our efforts of building relationships and getting access to people in positions of power to invite us in, we have to have, we need to bring something to the table beyond just an idea. And if you have an idea, who then could actually implement it? And so you build your team to be able to demonstrate that in communities where they go, oh, we want more of that. And that's what we keep finding is people say, what we're doing is not working, we want more. And so I really believe, Christine and many others on this who've been working for the Department of Peace for so long, is that it's gotta, in the meantime, till these folks get it together, there's a lot of work that needs to happen and can happen on the community level. And that's where we find the most lift. So thank you for that question and for your perseverance. Yeah. I do see Jerry has his hand up, but I don't know how you want to run this, Dan. Sorry.
That's fine. I'll go with your intuition.
Mary, what you got? You got to unmute yourself.
I can do it there. Oh,
there you go.
How's that?
You're live.
Okay.
Peace.
No, first of all, thank you. I'm not the original Jerry Rubin. Sure, most of you know that. He sadly died jaywalking in L.A. back in 1994.
Wow.
I've been confused with him for decades. He was a good guy. I have the same name. And here at home with my wife, Marissa, my peace partner wife, we were actually married 37 years ago this Friday at a peace wedding in Santa Monica. And I've been an activist for about 40 years. I've organized hundreds of events. I support the Peace Department. I know Dennis Kucinich. And I started a support group for activists called the Activist Support Circle. And I feel that we're at very challenging times now, and it requires what I would call a new approach to activism and a lot of self-analyzing, not blaming ourselves, but it does seem that we have a lot of energy on the table that inadvertently keeps us divided. And we need to cure that, do the best we can. We need to work together. We need to be realistic idealists. We need to understand how important this November 3rd election is. And even though I'm politically, I would say, to the left of Bernie, I can't imagine how progressive activists wouldn't understand that voting to expand the blue wave and voting Democrat wouldn't be the best solution.
So Jerry, I'm gonna kind of cut you off a little bit. I'm sorry to do it, but We have a time at the end for more like general shares.
Oh, I didn't know that. I apologize.
Okay. I love what you brought to the table. I appreciate your decades of activism for sure. While we've got our special guests here, I kind of want to focus on questions on the topic if we can.
Okay. I apologize.
That's all right. No, I really appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Sorry.
Jerry. No problem. No problem at all. Thank you. Thanks for letting me cut you off. Joan, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's on your mind, Joan?
Sure. My name is Joan Vetter Ehrenberg. I live in Whitefish, Montana. You may have seen us on the news lately. I've lived here for 29 years. I moved here from New York, Long Island, and Woodside. I worked on the Department of Peace 10 years ago, and we sold the Mother's Day piece of the pie. We did all that fun stuff, which was great. I'm pretty involved in Democratic politics. So currently I substitute teach at Muldown, and my mission is to infiltrate them with peace and love. And so in Montana, in the county that I live in, Flathead County, I can count on my hand how many people of color there are. I'm in a classroom and I get a spot of time and I take out my peace book and I, have the kids, I talk to them, I read, the stories. But the one that was really interesting, and I'm gonna wrap this part up quick and get to the big thing, was this, I asked this one gal who's person of color, I said, have you ever felt uncomfortable? And she's in third grade. And she said, yes. And the whole class just like they had no idea. So Saturday, I felt what she felt every day. We had 1,000 people in Kalispell, Montana. We had 400 militiamen with machine guns. I walked in there and I said, you know what? Hey, how you doing? Where you from? This is your space. This is my space. Nobody had a permit. It was the most disorganized, unbelievable thing, sending these baby kids who had no idea what they were doing, except they wanted to say, I can't breathe and Black Lives Matter. All the militia from the whole region came over. It was harrowing. Thank God I had 4 women who all were afraid to go for their own reasons. We all teamed up, we tag teamed, we did it. We spread a good message. Move aside. John Tester is our senator. He's on the Veterans Committee. I presented 2 years ago as a delegate to the state convention, the Department of Peace. Dana, his staff person, said, John will introduce that in the Veterans Committee. That's the way to go. Because I presented it the year before for the platform convention. So he's a good guy. He'll do it, but he needs support. Well, Dana now is, her partner is Denise Juno, who did the bullying program in Montana. But of course, the Republicans defunded it. They're in Washington, in Seattle. You know that all the Pacific Northwest, with all the crazy militia people we have, can build a coalition and support this in the Senate. We have to introduce it in the Senate, and we have to introduce it now. We have to make our Democratic senators show that they actually have some sort of an idea on how the hell we're gonna get through this mess. And then, everyone's like, oh no, nobody's gonna approve it. No. How long does it take for us to get anything done? It takes 20, we're still fighting this crap after 40, 50, or 60 years. So this is my baby. And I do so many ridiculous things that I just throw myself out there. But I really want us to introduce this in the Senate. And I will help you however you can to make that happen. So
thank you, Joan.
Because if we don't start, like the
thank
platform
you. Thank
of the
you. Party, got it. We got it. There may be an opportunity for you to share a link or something like that, but.
Okay, we gotta do it.
No, it's, yeah. you're right. And I bet you there is so much deep passion and angst that so many of us feel on this call, but thank you for sharing that. So yeah. Dan, we hand it back to you, sir.
Thanks. We're a little bit over time for this segment, but if you stick around for the rest of the call, if we have time toward the end, you could pick some of it back up again. But let me give it to you to sort of say what you want to say in conclusion for this time, because this might be the sort of end of this segment. I'm sorry for folks that I didn't get to. In transparency, there were one or two folks that I know we've heard from more consistently on monthly calls, so I didn't go exactly in order. So if you didn't get called on, hopefully you'll get called on next time. But Hart and Jeffrey, what do you want to leave us with on this topic?
I wanted to say that one of the things that we think is really, really important is to help people get out there in the best way possible and share some of the ways that we can help cops not arrest people. There are many diversion programs. There are many ways. Restorative justice is an incredible way to do that. There's civil citations. There's just the conversation. There are there's teen court. There is dialogues where you can have community dialogue if there's a community thing. They just aren't aware of all of these things. If you're not aware of them, you can look up any of those things. There's all this training that's available for cops, for people. I think that if we could do that, we can see the police and law enforcement change without with substantial gain financially, because it would reduce a lot of the incredible expenses of incarcerating people and arresting people and ruining lives. And that's something that you can do right in your neighborhood, just to find out, you know, what diversion programs they are, and call your local law enforcement, call the state attorney's office, call those people. And you would be surprised, on a local level, it is so much easier to get a hold of somebody, a person of supposed power, to help make that change.
Yeah, just my final comment, Dan, is this idea of standing in the gap, and there's a notion of multi-partiality, right? I'm a certified mediator for 20 plus years, and you're supposed to be neutral, but many of us feel like that's actually not possible. So then how do we be advocates and champions for the space? And when we take one over the other, we may even in fact lose some moral ground. So we're finding that this idea that we, if we can stand in the gap to be an advocate for the process of change, that we help to bring people closer in together.
Thank you, I really love that insight. Yeah, but before we let you go, and you're welcome to stay for the rest of the call, but we also understand it's getting late over there.
And we haven't had supper yet.
It's 10 o'clock.
Had supper. Yeah, I do want to just run through what we have in mind to recommend for actions to people, because it really dovetails from what you just said. That basically what we're recommending is a spectrum from the very local to the national. As Hart was saying, if you're not familiar with these practices, alternatives to arrest, particularly for nonviolent activities, but alternatives in a whole slew of possibilities, restorative justice practices, restorative discipline programs in schools. What are the ways that we can reduce arrests and also reduce the disproportionate minority impact? Yes. All these things are available. You can see examples of them on the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building website at centerforpeacebuilding.org. You can also read about them on the Peace Alliance website, peacealliance.org, under each of our five cornerstones of peace building. The cornerstones are cultivating personal peace, teaching peace in schools, promoting community peace building, humanizing justice systems, and fostering international peace building. And we've got examples of programs in all those areas. So the longer term homework project is to become familiar with these modalities and develop relationships with people who can make these changes. That's the superintendent of schools. That's the county commissioner. That's the city commissioner. This is your congresspeople. This is your neighbors, because you can build a coalition this way. If you want to just take a simple action this month, you want to do something that'll take you 10, 15 minutes, go to the Peace Alliance homepage of our website and sign on to endorse the Blueprint for Peace. The Blueprint for Peace promotes peace building tools in all those cornerstone areas. And all it takes is a couple of clicks and you'll send messages to both of your senators and your House member. This is a very powerful tool because it's a framework for all these peace building processes. So that's our request to you this month is do the research, get educated, do some local advocacy. This is a smorgasbord. You can do all or pick any of these and sign on to the Blueprint for Peace. If you've done it already, do it again and share with your neighbors and friends, with your contacts. That's our request. So we're going to move along into our next segment. Again, Hart and Jeffrey, it's time for you to get your dinner. Thank you so much for joining us.
So good to see you.
Love you all.
Thank you.
Awesome. And now to hear about some of what some Peace Alliance folks have been doing, there is a very active and awesome Department of Peacebuilding Committee, and we have a representative from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee with us, Ms. Kendra Ma, to give us a report on recent activities. And you are unmuted. What's going on, Kendra? Nice to see you.
Thank you. I wanted to read this. You have been invited to this meeting tonight because you are all representatives of various minority groups of San Francisco, whom we felt would have knowledge of and an interest in the problems of this city in areas of police brutality and harassment. Our immediate concern is to avert a situation here in San Francisco that could lead to riots and armed conflict as we have witnessed in Los Angeles. Throughout the strife, there has been ever-ringing cries of police brutality. Cries are heard here too. The police, the civic government officials, and the local news media give no cognizance to such charges and deny there is any problem with law enforcement officers other than disrespect of law and order from the general public. There are programs underway in areas of poverty, employment, education, housing, and social welfare. But explosive police relations in the community continue to be ignored. This is dated 1965, and it is from an opening speech that my mother gave to create Citizens Alert and in San Francisco to deal with police brutality with minority groups, including homosexual groups. And they called for a 24-hour telephone service set up much like the Suicide Prevention Bureau so that cases of police brutality may be reported and processed. Petitioning for a Citizens Police Review Board, much as the Negro community of Los Angeles is demanding, and supporting a Supervisor Terry Francois' proposal for an enlarged police commission to give broader community representation. I just thought that was fascinating. My moms were civil rights activists, and I've been working to clear out their house and keep their legacy. They did a lot to promote women's causes, civil rights. It just goes on and on. And they're Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon. And Phyllis Lyon just recently died in April. So I just found that fascinating. And to hear today on the news, people talking about reimagining police services. I just think that's wonderful. And to us who've been working on the Department of Peace and peace building, it just seems like that current, that ripple that you talked about, Dan, is becoming a current, talking about reimagining something as huge as the police department and focusing on social programs. And we keep hearing too, without justice, there can be no peace. In the Department of Peacebuilding campaign, we think that without peace or peace building, there can be no justice. And so we still work on that overall, as well as we work with all of the individual parts that Jeffrey and Hart talked about. So there's a lot of legislation that's coming up, which is pretty exciting. And so we ask you to look at the Department of Peacebuilding page on the Peace Alliance website, to contact legislators the way Joan talked about earlier, and welcome your support.
Thank you, Kendra. And for folks that have questions or want to get more involved with the ongoing Department of Peacebuilding campaign, Nancy Merritt is also on that committee and is on part of our leadership council, and you can send her an email, nancy@peacealliance.org, and she'll connect you with. When are the monthly Department of Peacebuilding calls, Kendra? Is it the second Wednesday? Third Wednesday?
The third Wednesday.
Third Wednesday.
Yeah. I think there's a calendar, and it's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Okay. Thanks for that, Kendra. Thanks for all that you do. And I'm so sorry about your mom's passing. Condolences.
It was a celebration.
Okay. For Robin. Okay, well, we are at the field shares portion of our time. So this is a time when anything that's going on in your campaign work, in your organizing, in your neighborhood peace building, we would love to hear about it. And if you want to share something about how these times are for you, how you're orienting yourself towards taking care of yourself or taking care of your world, very open to hearing what's important to you too. I see Nancy's got her hand up. I'll first off pass the mic to Nancy. Anybody else, feel free to raise your hand. What's on your mind, Nancy?
Well, I want to thank Kendra and also Hart and Jeffrey. And I want to thank all the folks on this call who've said they've worked for Department of Peace in the past and are still interested in it. We really appreciate that, and we hope you'll join with us in this effort. It's quite a long haul thing. I was going to ask Jeffrey and Hart what sustains them other than their work, and I just returned from a Black Lives Matter gathering today, sort of my first gathering since all this quarantine stuff, and the thing that struck me is it was at Civic Center in San Francisco, and it was under a banner that was on Civic Center congratulating our 2020 graduates, and the whole demonstration or gathering, I guess, really, and it was across from a Pride thing. So it ended with the whole crowd dancing. So I was really heartened by that.
Glad to hear about that. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, next I see someone in the 323 area code. You're there by phone. I can unmute you. Go ahead. 323-543. Maybe dropped off or don't have a question. Or there. Okay, let's skip that for now.
Can I join in?
Is that a phone number 808?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just June 1st. I helped to end the monthly shift rotation of police officers to improve patrol officer health and performance. I emailed to COLEA, which is the national board, and the chief of police and a sergeant, my local sergeant, and a link to International Journal of Genomics article that proves that monthly shift rotation is dangerous for police officers and decreases their performance, causing risks that are unacceptable. So we finally did it. We changed the shift. The officers stopped doing monthly shift rotations. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. It sounds like a lot of possible benefits could accrue from that. Not the least might be just building that connection, building that relationship, and some foundations for dialogue. I see Beth Ayers, you've got your hand up. You still have something to share, Beth? Let me unmute you.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to say that, you know, since we're learning about the whole union, police union, and their contract and how much money they get allotted every year, that maybe some of that money could be used for peace building within the department. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that more going that way. I just want to say that.
Yeah, thank you. Sounds good. There's been a little bit of a move in that direction. Here in Tallahassee, Florida, we also, before the quarantine started, we were doing police youth dialogue. And if you think of that as a peace building process, which I do, we were doing monthly police youth dialogues through the sheriff's department, and they did manage to assign some of their funding to support that process. It was just the beginning, but it was something. There was definitely willingness and interest on the part of the sheriff's office. So yeah, more of that, more peace building.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. I don't see any hands up. Does anybody else have something that they'd like to share from your neck of the woods? Linda, yeah, I see your hand. Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate it. First of all, I wanted to say this is my first time at a Tuesday evening meeting, and I'm thrilled to be here. And I want to thank everyone who's contributed. And Kendra, I want to send your condolences. I want to just say that there's so much bravery in your life. There's so much compassion in your life, and you're a great example of what we should all be, I think, reaching toward. I live in Dallas, Texas, and there's a disconnect, I think, with the community of peace in this area. And so I just would love to reach out and know about anyone else who is here in this area that I could get involved with, because it's become very, well, it's always been important to me, but I want to take action on it now. So I just wanted to put that out there. And if anyone wants to connect with me, I would love that.
That sounds wonderful, Linda. Thank you. Please send me an email, dan@peacealliance.org. If you'd like to do some connecting and organizing in the Dallas area, we'll talk about it, and I'll be happy to send an email to people within, say, 10 or 25 miles of you to help to put you in touch with them.
Great. Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate it. And I also want to say that the one thing that the Hart said that keeps resonating is that we have to listen. We have to listen to the community, and we have to listen to, you know, I'm a person of privilege, and because I'm white, and I can't walk in those shoes, but I can listen, and I can be an advocate, and I can follow directions well. So that's what we have to do. We've got to be diligent about truly listening and mindfully listening so we can help change.
Thank you. I'll say amen. right there with you. Nadia Cindy, go ahead.
Yes, I'm an Arab American, and I have a lot of problems. You know, nobody, a little bit, we don't have any connection with peace, you know, communication here in Eugene, Oregon. I live in Oregon, and I had a lot of problems with the sheriff and the government themselves, commissioner and stuff. And I ran 5 times for public offices, and they screwed me up. They stole my house, you know. Our attorney general sold my house without my signature. So I am dealing with a lot of pain, and I don't know where to go, because the Peace Alliance, we don't have any body to connect with, or at least with me, because everybody is scared of government.
Sounds like some substantial challenges.
Right.
Yeah. They're I'm trying to think of a resource for facilitating dialogue. I mean, you know, this a lot of what we're about is trying to, I know somebody who was a board member of the Peace Alliance and a longtime activist who does live in Eugene. He might have some ideas or resources. If you drop me a line, I may be able to make a connection. That would be helpful. So,
because I know everybody. I ran for public offices 5 times, so I know everybody from top to bottom. What's his name? Do you remember?
I remember his name, but I don't want to speak it out just in case he's not interested. You know, his life might be in a whole different direction right now. I haven't spoken with him in 5 or 6 years. So I'm willing to reach out to him, but I don't want to say publicly that he's available to you. Drop me an email and we'll talk about it if you like. Dan@peacealliance.org.
Peacealliance.org. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sure. We've got 5 minutes and I see some more hands up. Don, go ahead, Don. I didn't get to you earlier. You still have something you want to share?
Yes, thank you. Just wanted to comment on Hart and her partner's presentation this morning. In working, bringing people together, bringing the place together with people in the community who are dissatisfied, one of the issues is it a matter of bringing tolerance between the two, or is it possible to somehow recruit and train some of the people in the community to become leaders? In Connecticut, for example, I wrote a grant years ago that funded about 15 positions for basically people who were drug users or recovered individuals who could be hired by the state. And the state actually changed the law so that people could be hired based on street experience rather than academic experience. And the idea was they worked with people, worked with police and so on, rather than the meetings were not so much against, but how do you cooperate so that these people could become leaders actually and then form their own groups and activity. So that's just an idea that when you bring people together like this, can you also encourage people in the community to become leaders and work in the community as advocates to work with the police on a longer term basis. So that was my thought about the presentation this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Thank you so much. I just wanted to remind folks while I'm thinking of it, this call is being recorded. And if you found inspiration or value and you wanted to share it with folks, it'll be on our website on the Peace On, is the name of the podcast series. So feel free to find it there. It should be posted within a couple of days. Also, if you like what we do and want to support us financially, we welcome your financial support. You can, again, go to peacealliance.org and become a monthly contributor or a one-time contributor. I also want to mention that there's been a weekly connection opportunity. Oh my goodness, what is that? My computer made a sound I didn't like. Okay. Called the Hope Story Circle. Every Saturday, there's an inspirational speaker and conversation and then an opportunity to connect in small groups with other people on the call. And there have been people on this call from all around the world. I've attended a couple and found it really inspiring and beautiful. So if you're on our email list, hopefully you're getting those updates. And otherwise, you can find it on our website. Hope Story Circle. Is that right, Yelena and Liz? Yelena and Liz are both on the call right now, our hosts for the Hope Story Circle, as well as Terry. Yeah, you can find it on the website or check your inbox. I think we have time for one more, and I saw one more hand was up. It was that phone number, 352, that didn't hear me before, didn't speak up. You still have something to say, area code on 323-523-543? Okay.
Can I ask who that guy was? Because we are slaves, those of us who are working to help end police brutality and not getting paid for it. We are the slaves of today. We have to do it because they target us. How do we get paid for it? Can you tell us how he did it?
Oh, you want to connect with Don about how he wrote that grant to fund those positions? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Don, how can somebody get in touch with you? We only have 30 seconds. Can you give an email address?
Easy, DD Pet, DD like Donald Duck Pet, PET, at comcast.net, comcast.net. DD, like DD, PET, pet, like in the pet dog. A very easy email. DD, like Donald Duck's pet, PET, at Comcast, comcast.net. It's not a .com, it's a .net. And be happy to chat with you or anyone else.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Don. Thanks you all for your interest. Really a pleasure being with you. This is challenging times, some more inspiring times. I'm glad we can come together and connect. And please take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other as much as you can. And I'll leave you with my favorite closing quote for these calls. Folks who have been with us for a while can probably recite it along with me. From Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." I wish you all very happy dreams, and please take good care. I'll unmute everybody, and you can say your good nights if you wish. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye,
love you all.
Bye, Tom.
Thank you.
Take care. Good night.
I'll talk to you, Dan.
Good night.
Thank you, Dan.
Welcome,
thank you.
Liz. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I spoke out like too fast.
You're fine. Late. You're fine. I really appreciate all your passion and care and everything you're doing for sure.
I'll try to reach out to Nance and get a little bit smarter about this stuff.
We're all in a learning curve.
I just need to send something to John Tester. I just would like it to go right, you know, be laid out properly.
Mm-hmm. And Nance will be a great partner in this for you, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Good job, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Closing it up. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Namaste. Good night.